Hello, welcome to Artbeat Africa with me, Jenny Horrocks. This week, music from a Zambian singer who's led a nomadic life. We meet a filmmaker who's made a documentary about an Ethiopian diva of the 1950s and 60s, and the Nigerian who's using her art to protest the kidnapping of young girls from northern Nigeria.
It's a depressing topic that I have to confront every time I'm in the studio. Doing something with some colour actually is a bit therapeutic for me.
But first, let's meet an Ethiopian filmmaker whose mission has been to tell the story of an extraordinary singer and dancer who performed back in the 1950s and 60s in Ethiopia. The documentary film is called Azni. That's the sound of Aznekech Worku, who, along with similar artists at that time, was derogatively called Asmari. According to the church, the word meant those not going to heaven and referred to artists and entertainers of the time. Aznekech was essentially seen as a free woman or free spirit who lived life on the edge. She was beautiful and men often stopped to watch as she passed by. But it was her behaviour which raised eyebrows. She took lovers when she wanted and did other things which would shock conservative Ethiopian society. She didn't care. Well, Rachel Samuel made this documentary about Aznekech and told Hiwete Haile Selassie how she first met this extraordinary woman.
I met her in a two-room house, bedridden with rheumatoid arthritis. And she was pretty much paralyzed, except moving her head and one on her left arm. But then she started talking and telling us stories from her past. I was blown away. I said, wow, this woman is awesome. And I want to do a documentary film on her.
So that was actually when you first met her physically, that you'd come across her work before then?
I was very little. I would say about 4 years old, playing a black and white television, her karar. Karar is a very traditional instrument. I remember thinking, who is this woman? I want to know her. And years later, my husband bought a CD and said, Rachel, you got to listen to this CD. And the music started playing, and that little four-year-old girl appeared in my head. And I said, oh, my God, this woman, I know her. Her name is Aznekech Worku. She is amazing. I remember how much I loved this woman, but I don't think she's alive, I told him. And then months later, we're in Ethiopia in a restaurant, and her music started playing in the foreground. And all of a sudden, I said, is this woman alive? I wish I had known her. And the people that I was with said, oh, no, she's still very much alive. She's sick. I can take you to her if you want.
What led you then to decide to make a film about her life and work?
Her stories were funny, were unusual. She was very frank. She had a lot of experience. And she was funny. And I said, do you mind if I do a documentary film on you? And I was not a filmmaker then. I just said it to her. And she said, who are you and why? That was her response. And I said, well, I just think you're awesome and I just want to make sure you get recorded. Because I thought, honestly, she was going to die like in 2 weeks because she was just so frail. But she was really strong. Her sense of self was dominating. I was overpowered by that. And she said, okay.
I loved the film. And I was very struck by this woman who was unmistakably, thoroughly unrespectable, not only in high society Addis then in her heyday, but even now. She smoked, she drank, she had a penchant for married men, she openly had lovers. All of these things would have been scandalous then, but even scandalous now. And yet she was clearly much loved by her peers, by those younger than her, by those older than her. How do you explain this?
I guess it's human, what she was doing, I guess it's, except she did it in the open. That's the only difference.
Isn't that the key difference, is that she was open about what everyone else found taboo?
Well, she enjoyed it and she didn't really care. For her, life was about expressing passion. Really, that's what she felt like she should be doing. And she didn't care what anybody else thought about it, so long as she satisfied her needs.
What did you find most interesting in making the film?
It was an honor to get to know her. She was like an aunt.
Did you get a sense of what drove her to be such a rebel, someone who just didn't care what society thought of her?
You know, I asked her that several times, but I think it's her nature. She said You know, I just followed what my heart, you know, whereas everybody else in the society, you know, follow society instead of themselves. So she followed herself.
And how did you find that she talked about the past? Was it filled with regret? Was it filled with laughter?
A lot of laughter. She said, I have no regret.
And sadly, she died in 2011. So filmmaker Rachel Samuel filmed her just in time to capture that bit of history. It's been over 7 months since 240 girls were kidnapped by Boko Haram in northern Nigeria. But before the international outcry that greeted the schoolgirls' disappearance, artist Peju Alatise was already using her art to protest the kidnapping of many other young girls from the region, which went unreported in the media for many months. The Lagos-based artist recently displayed her art in London, where she spoke to Focus on Africa's Sarah Mojtahedzadeh about her provocative piece.
The title of the work is missing. There are actually 96 panels. 12 of the panels are missing. But actually, they all represent a girl that has been missing. Girls being kidnapped in Nigeria has been going on for a while, but it hasn't received any kind of media attention until 240 girls got kidnapped while they were sleeping in school, you know.
So this piece you started before the now famous Bring Back Our Girls campaign.
I mean, the 90 girls that were missing in between January and February. They were stolen in tens, you know, over 2 months period.
You've got 96 sort of frames with
silhouettes.
Some of the frames are blank. They're very colourful, but there's also a lot of black in them as well. Tell me a little bit about your choice of medium and choice of colour.
With this particular piece, working with the colours, and I had to work with the colours on this particular piece because it's a very depressing thing to talk about. And I'd been working on girl issues for about 3-4 years now. It's a depressing topic that I have to confront every time I'm in the studio. Doing something with some colour actually is a bit therapeutic for me. And the best way to present the colours is on the black.
And you say here in your artist statement that your work is critical of the Nigerian government. Do you see it as your role as an artist to point out some of the flaws in your society?
I do not know, to be very honest. I don't think that my government is very interested in what the arts is at the moment.
Are people interested in hearing what artists have to say in Nigeria?
Oh, I guess so. It's difficult. I'm pessimistic, so it might be different from what I see. Maybe because I want change to happen quickly, but change isn't going to happen as quickly as I want it to. So I would probably say no. But artists do create a lot of awareness.
It's interesting you say you're pessimistic and also impatient for change. What motivates you to keep persevering and keep using your art to try and send a message?
Because that's all I can do. I don't do anything else. I couldn't do anything else. That's the way I breathe. I'm an artist, I have to create. And then I'm influenced by my life, and this is what is going on in my life, and these are the things that affect my life. So it's just a natural occurrence. I can't help it.
Peju Alatise from Nigeria. Music now, and a young singer-songwriter who's just launched her debut album entitled Shiwezwa.
You see me through eyes blinded by what you think you know. Took a pen, wrote on a label and tied it to my toe. From now on, shall I be defined by the boundaries of your mind? Shall I bow my back? Shall I shut my mouth? Shall I leave my pride behind? And whoa.
Mvula Rennie is half Zambian, half Scottish, and has so far led quite a nomadic life. Born in Zambia, her parents moved with her to Switzerland, while she was still very young, and from there she went and lived in Kenya and then in the United States. But throughout it all, her attachment to Zambia and her family there have been a constant. The name of the album is Shuwezwa, and she told me what it means.
Shuwezwa is the village that my great-great-great-grandmother, who I am named after, who is Namvula, came from. And Namvula is a caller of the rain. And because this album really, for me, when I reflect back on the process and how long it's taken me to get to this point of writing the album, and everything that the album means for me, it's a homecoming. Culturally, but also spiritually and emotionally, it's me looking for my roots and really defining myself in the context of everything that I have travelled through musically and geographically.
I've listened to some of the tracks on your album and I was struck by the use of the kora, a West African instrument, on some of them. Maweo, for example. Tell me about the use of the kora and about your band in general.
Yeah, well, I'm blessed to have an absolutely fantastic band. With regards to the kora, I think that is just a sound that I like. I don't think it's any deeper than that. And Kajali Kuyate, who is the kora player who plays on the album, is a great collaborator and he just gets my music.
I always think the kora is such a calming instrument. It has such a calming effect on people listening to it. I get the feeling you're someone who strongly believes in the sort of healing power of music.
I do. The kora is very calming on some of the songs in the album, but then on, for example, Nanda Yeyo, you know, we kind of rock it out. Kajali rocks it out on the kora.
So Nanda Yeya actually was written by an aunt of mine who is a very, very well-respected singer back home. Her name is Maureen Dilanda. She became my mentor when I was back in Zambia a couple of years ago and kind of really started delving into the culture. And so she had written this song which talks about overcoming pain. It says, when I look back to where I was, I cry, Ndalila is the word. I cry and it causes pain in my heart. But when I see how far I have come and where I am now, I give thanks.
How did the music start with you? How did you get into
it? I started learning the piano when I was a child and then gave that up. I had not a very inspiring piano teacher, and so gave that up in secondary school quite quickly, which is a shame, actually. It's my biggest regret. And then picked up the guitar and started writing songs on the guitar, as a teenager does. Then kind of floated in and out of music, but I had quite a chronic lack of self-confidence when it came to expressing myself musically, and so I tried a lot of other things. I worked as a photographer, but music was the only way that I felt I could really be expressive, and it's the only place that I find I'm able to be myself. And so it's been a long journey to reach this point where we're releasing the first album. She dances love songs across the sea. It's been a long time. She's been searching the winds. She's been waiting for news. Waiting for news of your coming.
Soulful sounds from Namvula, ending Artbeat Africa for another week. Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for more cultural inspiration. You can also find arts and cultural stories throughout the week on our Facebook, Twitter and Google Plus pages. Our username is BBC Africa. I'm Jenny Horrocks. Bye-bye for now.
Too many rains have come, too many rains have gone.